Like, we may think of early jazz now as sort of, you know, nice and square and, like, quaint or whatever. But at the time, in the context, it was, like, radical, progressive, transgressive. You know, it was, like, it was new and it was dangerous. And that's something not to be taken lightly, I think.
In mere seconds, you will be listening to Improvisations to Go. But first, I must inform you that this podcast would not exist, could not exist, without the support of Aubrey's Restaurant. They'll make it for you to go. Also, thanks to the generous support of Dr. Craig and Debbie Jarvis and their verified hunting poodle, Curly Sue. That's right, verified hunting poodle. I did not want to leave New Orleans, but I love that feeling of not being ready to leave a place when it's time to go. It reminds me of those days, you know, when summer camp was ending. You had done all the summer camp things, you climbed a tree, you developed a crush on that girl from Roane County that never went anywhere. I'm over that now, by the way. You learned to swim, you learned to dance, you got sunburned, you laughed so hard with your friends it made you sore. But basically, at summer camp, you did the same things over and over every day, and yet you still want more. Because you know, when you leave summer camp, the next day, you might not feel that alive again. There's one crush I have that's always reciprocal. It's the crush I have on history. The more you love it, the more it gives you. And the history well is endless for anybody possessing a lifespan, say, shorter than that of recorded time. One thing that became really clear when I started this project, I could not and I should not try and tell the story of New Orleans music. It's too big. It's too rich. It's too complicated. I'm not smart enough. So what can you do? Well, you just grab impressions. You improvise whatever riffs the city throws at you, and you go. Sure, hit the famous places, see why they're famous. There's usually a pretty good reason they're famous. And if you got time, find the fringes. Louis Armstrong was way on the fringes when he started, a radical in every beautiful sense of the word. New Orleans has always had a tradition of breaking tradition. Terrence Blanchard, Nicholas Payton, Christian Scott, the Boswell sisters, John Batiste, Trombone Shorty, the beautiful list goes on. But each of those folks found their own vision and voice while still celebrating the essence of New Orleans. Those are all locals, but New Orleans has always been a city of transplants, especially for musicians drawn to what Aurora Neeland refers to as its beautiful, vibrant madness. In fact, she even thanks beautiful, vibrant madness in her liner notes of her sweeping, tradition-loving, intoxicating recording, Comeback Children. She made this with her group, the Royal Roses. In the liner notes on this record, there's even a quote from Mahler. Tradition is not the worship of ashes, but the preservation of fire. It sets the tone perfectly. On this Fats Waller tune, the Royal Roses smoked the arrangement, but during the solo section, they allowed themselves to go ever so slightly off the rails. Knowing Aurora Neeland's more avant-garde work, it's not unreasonable to expect that it could go full Sun Ra at any moment. And then, just when you think it might fall off the rails, they jump back on and swing it home.
I am Aurora Neeland. I consider myself human. I consider myself alive. I consider... What's the question?
What do you consider yourself?
I am a sound maker, a musician, composer, performance artist.
Is it spiritual, this place?
Sure, every place is spiritual.
But is this one... Has this one advanced your own spiritual
plane or development or?
Ooh, I don't have an intelligent answer for that. I mean, I think any place that you allow into your, that you open your system to, will advance your spirit. I feel that way about California, certainly. New Orleans has a very special relationship with the music, and the social fabric of the city are intrinsically tied together, and they have been for a very long time. And so there's something that's really beautiful about experiencing music that is tied to social life, social practice, social ritual that's tied to every day of how you live. So there's certainly an amazing energy, I think, that is in New Orleans that is, I would describe as both like an intense vibrancy and also a lot of desperation. Both of those things exist almost because of each other, I would say. So there's a lot of darkness in New Orleans. There's a lot of poverty, and there's a lot of desperation. And there's also a lot of like beauty and community and coming together. Those things coexist, for better or for worse. I think often in New Orleans there is this, there's a real sense of the now, there's a sense of the present, and that comes across in the way that people live. I think it's always hard to make generalities about culture because there's so many different intricacies in that, but I will say that I do experience New Orleans as a place that really values the present moment, and that's for better and for worse. We also, I think, talk a lot about New Orleans and southeastern Louisiana as a very temporal place, so there's a lot of shifting happening now, and certainly with climate and climate crisis, there's you know, being built on an unstable land on a swamp and where things are shifting all the time, I think there's a sense of temporality, and so you that comes through in the music, that comes through in the culture, whether we're framing it like that, I think that somewhere in the back that comes through in this sort of like live for the now, let the good times roll, as people say. So that I would reckon that's a part of what is maybe helping you relax. For me, I kind of see Come Back Children for that project, The Royal Roses, as stepping out and sort of revealing more what we have been doing and developing over the years, which is tied to the New Orleans traditional jazz, but also allowing these other influences that are important to me, and what I see as important to any tradition is to sort of like let life into the tradition. And so I have been very enamored of a lot of what at the time was called avant-garde music or free improvisation, and I see a lot of that music of Art Ensemble of Chicago and Sun Ra as coming out of the collective improvisation tradition that started and still is very vibrant here in New Orleans.
Another New Orleans transplant, this one from Baltimore, was Byron Asher. His release, Byron Asher's Scrunch Music, is a wonderful blue bridge that takes the listener from key elements of New Orleans music and culture right up to the cutting edge of modern composition. Everything about Byron seems inventive, including his suggestion we conduct our interview on a bridge, on a blue bridge, which is what we did when we talked on Magnolia Bridge over Bayou St. John.
There's a large class of musicians who are making a living playing the sort of book of the city, playing the standards, playing the New Orleans tradition, which is deep and beautiful and amazing. And there's a lot of work to do that. And I think that what I have found in myself and with a number of peers is that when the opportunity comes along to pursue a more adventurous project with original music, people are really excited to do that. because it's special. It's different. It's not the same book. And I think there are a lot of people, myself included, who are like, who love the book, are very happy to play the book. And also, you know, as a musician who's not from here, I understand that it's not my tradition. And so there's a certain degree of, for myself, thinking about, okay, like, what do I think about this? You know, what, you know, I am not of the New Orleans clarinet lineage, the way that some clarinetists here very much are. But I also love it and deeply respect it, and have some thoughts about it as well. That so the Scrunch project sort of came out of that. In the same way that there is a rich tradition of traditional New Orleans music, there's also a rich tradition of non-traditional New Orleans music, and that's been really exciting for me to discover over the last few years. Back in the day, when this music was being formed, like, we may think of early jazz now as sort of, you know, nice and square and like quaint or whatever, if that is what you want to think about it. But like, which, to be clear, I don't. But at the time, in the context, it was like radical, progressive, transgressive. You know, it was like, it was new and it was dangerous. And that's something not to be taken lightly, I think.
As luck would have it, I was able to catch Scrunch music at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Center. The show was every bit as good as the record, maybe even better, thanks in part due to the inspirational, crazy, adventurous, beautiful solos from every single member, including Aurora Neeland. The Scrunch Music Band could do it all, everything from trad jazz to avant-garde, and often in a nice space that allowed both of those things to mingle effortlessly, because New Orleans has always been about the mingle. Without the mingle, you're really not going to have jazz. You're not going to have rock and roll. And you're not going to have big chunks of American culture that the rest of the world cannot seem to get enough of. And now, for no reason at all, a brass funk rock New Orleans version of Led Zeppelin music. Well, you know, one of the themes of this episode is letting other influences in, and letting Led Zeppelin into New Orleans seems like a good idea to me. Bonorama is a jazz, brass, funk, rock band, and who knows what else. I want to thank them for doing an entire record of Led Zeppelin music, because first of all, it just totally rocks and swings. But it's the first time I've ever been able to understand Robert Plant's lyrics. These guys know how to enunciate. But I think my favorite cut is this one, the instrumental version of an overlooked Zeppelin classic, The Crunge. When I was in New Orleans, Bonorama was out on tour, so I gave the trombone player, Craig Klein, a phone call to check in and see how they're doing right now.
Hey, Todd from Knoxville. How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing, Craig?
Like everybody else, we're staying home. Some musicians are going online and playing, you know, some things like that. But everybody is staying home, and the only way that I can what I'm doing is just I'm practicing, because when the gigs come back, you got to be ready for them. You know what I'm saying? So I pretty much every day work on music and what I, how I deal with it. Myself, I mean, I play on a regular, when I'm not on tour, I'll be playing 30 or sometimes 40 gigs a month. I play a lot at Preservation Hall, play a lot on Frenchman Street, play a lot just all around town with some other brass bands that I play with. So it keeps quite busy. And lately, Preservation Hall has been doing, over the last year or so, like these Kids in the Hall shows that schools come during the day for sort of like field trips. And that was really going very, very strong. And it was like going 100 miles an hour down to zero overnight.
I really dig the crunge, which was originally, you know, British people trying to be American funky. And now here you are imitating the British people trying to be funkier and making it even funkier.
Yeah, Greg Hicks wrote that arrangement. And we also brought in Ivan Neville to play keyboard on that one track. Actually, he played on two tracks, but that was one of them that he played on.
You're in a lot of bands. Another one is a great one, the New Orleans Nightcrawlers. Your new record is Atmosphere, which I'm assuming is like New Orleans atmosphere, just based on hearing it.
We called it the record Atmosphere because when we talked about making this record, we wanted to create an atmosphere in our rehearsals and even in the studio that was sort of very friendly, sort of open, you know, hangout sort of vibe. So at all of our rehearsals that we were rehearsing for, somebody cooked some lunch. Somebody, we'd always rehearse it out at Brent Rose's house. He lives in Gentilly Park, New Orleans. And sometimes we'd barbecue. So we'd spend a few hours hanging, playing, eating. And it always, those kind of vibes always create, seems like better music. At least the feeling and everything is better. Your friends, when you make a record with your friends, it's like making some, hanging out with your family, you know, it comes out a little bit better. So that was the whole atmosphere. Even in the studio, when we were in the studio, man, Matt would cook this big old breakfast if we were early, or somebody would bring this big lunch in, and we would play. We'd take a break, we'd eat, we'd play some more, we'd take a break, we'd eat.
Wow, that sounds very familiar. That's my schedule in New Orleans. Wake up, eat, go see music, eat, go see more music, eat again. Eat while watching music and then have a snack before bed. You see, I love this food and I'm normally pretty good about moderation in all things, but in New Orleans, the food is the one thing where I was powerless. I was absolutely powerless. Well, yeah, and brass bands too, you know. If a brass band's on the street, I got no power to resist that. And walking through cemeteries, that's pretty cool. And, of course, you know, all the music is irresistible. In fact, I find New Orleans irresistible. I love how it holds the past in one hand, and it holds the present in one hand, and it holds the future in the third hand. How did it get three hands? I don't know, man. But, yeah, the food, the breakfast in particular. You know, I have the traditional eats, like your biscuits and your pancakes, but then I have the sort of nouveau things, and New Orleans does that, man. It holds the past and it explores the future in the present moment. It's incredible, and the past and the future and the present, they're not at odds there. There's room on the plate for everybody to do their thing. So why not just have one more incredible mixed up breakfast? And then, well, here's what happened. I woke up again. Thank you. Thank you very little. I didn't wake up hungry, but I figured it's a long day, you know, and on the train, and the train food is only training to be food, so better stock the intestinal reserves. When traveling to New Orleans, you must take advantage of the local creative Creole cuisine, and that, friends, I accomplished. I always start out with, of course, a base of red beans and rice, then an etouffee here, a jambalaya there, a gumbo to go, you know, and crown it off with a little bit of king cake. And then I had some boudin in my pack, and I ate some of that, and then topped it off with a little tiny baby inside the king cake. I love that stuff, I love that stuff, I love that stuff. Unwisely, I decided to spike the ball in the end zone. Saints be praised. Lined up like this. Two sausage biscuits on the flanks, four obese pancakes on the line, each of those suckers covered in syrup, and sausage bits oh so fine, and a fried omelet just in case with sausage in the milk. On purpose. That's right, they got milk sausage. Milk sausage. Where else are you gonna get that? I grabbed the lift. I told the driver, I said, you know, I'm not trying to tell you how to drive, but I'm not in a hurry, you know, so I'm going to the train station, but the train's not for a long time. I'm meeting a friend for a po' boy, and so watch out for that pothole, right? If you go in the left lane, it might, man, I started bouncing around back in there a little bit, you know, juggling up that milk sausage and the biscuits. Hey, man, if you could just slow down just a little bit. I'm bouncing around back here a little bit. I'm prone to motion sickness. I'm not feeling so good. Slow down, man, I'm not feeling so good. All that milk sausage seems like it wants out of this car. I don't think I want to hurl in your back seat on your nice floorboard, which is not that far. Man, I did not throw up on this car because I'm a gentleman. Class personified. When I walked into the New Orleans passenger terminal, my stomach began whispering to my brain's chemoreceptor trigger zone and conspiring with the vagus nerve, saying, let's ditch this breakfast right now. I never voted for this breakfast. Why don't you just walk into the men's room, stall number 3, and just in case, you know, just in case something happens, you might, uh-oh. The voice of an elderly gentleman behind me. Get on your knees, son. Avoid the splatter. Voice of experience. So I called my friend Patrice. You know, she lives over there in Metairie, and I said, you know, we might want to rethink that lunch plan. I'm not feeling it, you know, my absolute best. And, well, she showed up anyway. With a flour sack, which included a colorful array of pharmaceuticals, 2 cups of uncooked rice, a bright red orange for flavor, and an hour of conversation that went here and it went there, and we just talked. That's all, human conversation. And then it was time to go to Memphis. When I got on the train, I felt better. You know, I kind of realized that, you know, the rice was medicine. The conversation was medicine. That big reclining seat waiting on me, medicine. Look at that big seat. Take that, you crappy airlines. The sound of the train whistle. Medicine. Here comes the porter wanting my ticket. The porter, medicine. The ticket, medicine. People sitting in front of me, behind me. People loading in, people loading out. The whole world is medicine. 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 The whole world's medicine.
Improvisations to Go is a production of WUOT. This podcast was made possible by the generosity of Dr. Craig and Debbie Jarvis and their verified hunting poodle, Curly Sue. Also, thanks for the wonderful support of Aubrey's Restaurant. Like this podcast, you can get it to go. If you made it this far, you heard music from Aurora Neeland and the Royal Roses, Byron Asher, Bonorama, and the New Orleans Nightcrawlers. Music composed and improvised for this episode by Hunter Deacon, Daniel Kimbrough, David Dayoub, and Todd Steed. If you haven't stopped listening yet, you will find out I'm Chrissy Kuiper and that Todd Steed wrote and produced this thing. Subscribe to Improvisations to Go on YouTube. If you do, magical things will happen in your life. There's nothing else for me to say in this script, so I guess this is the end of this episode.